welcome to another edition of the Streaking Lawn Podcast. I'm Pierce, as I always am, and who's usually always with me is Caroline. How's it going?
Hey.
Hey. Are you doing well this fine rainy evening?
Oh my god, I'm so excited, Pierce.
Why are you so excited?
The Who is our bowl eligible, and it was awesome.
The Who's,
I can't even right now.
Our bowl eligible, and it was awesome. I'm sure anyone listening to this knows that they came back from a 15-point second half deficit. Particularly ugly way to get into a deficit. By giving up a big ass running play and throwing a pick six
78 yards
thereafter. Those 35 are ways seconds to start a close game in the second half that would make a lot of teams probably phone it in a little bit. And the Virginia Cavaliers certainly did not phone it in. Behind some apt deep throws, sticking some with the running game and, you know, mixing things up, and some heroic, they always say heroic defense, heroic effort, which was a little bit hyperbolic, but certainly an amazing display by the defense the whole day on a rainy day. That's got
to Tony Bennett would be proud.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Ben Kurt had some down games and came back and was dropping the ball right where he needed to be. I know they talked a little in the post game about how he came out in the second half particularly looking to lighten the touch a little bit, and maybe you saw some of that compared to the drops you saw in the first half. The receivers also said they ditched all their gloves in the second half, and that may have helped them as well. Regardless, there were three long touchdowns right in the second half on throws.
Yeah.
I mean, just awesome things to see. We've talked earlier before when they were happening in the Boise game, it was like, man, we haven't seen that happen for UVA in a long time. Like nice deep fade routes coming down as touchdowns. So just an exciting, awesome game that I predicted the result of last week on the podcast in response to your pessimism. So thank you for that.
I know. I think it was more, it was a retaliatory choice though, wasn't it?
Nonetheless, that's what I put my verbal support or prediction under, and it worked out.
I would also like to point out that I have correctly predicted the season record and time in which they became bowl eligible in our preseason podcast. Mm-hmm. I said on November 4th with a win over Georgia Tech, they would win their sixth game and go to 6-3 and be bowl eligible for the first time since 2011. I maybe swap some wins losses here and there. Just two. I thought they'd win all the home games and lose on the road, and they managed to swing some of those with Boise and the UNC.
Very.
But
impressive.
Yeah, so this game is like the definition of can't even for me, because there were so many frustrating things in the first half where it was like some of the, like you mentioned, the drops, whatever. So this game had it all. Like you look back and you just kind of, I think Ferber put together a list on Twitter that was like, here are all the crazy things that happened. You've got a rainstorm or like rain throughout the game. You've got a pick six, you've got interceptions, you've got drop passes, you've got a safety, you've got 2 2-point conversions, you have touchdown passes over 30 yards, you've got punts over 60 yards, you've got an extra point that ricochets off of both uprights before falling through, which put the winning team up by 4 points instead of the oh so catchable with a field goal 3 points. Mm-hmm. So just was a little bit of everything. Oh, kick return for a touchdown. Joe Reed finally got broke free after so many weeks of it being so close. So it was just a little bit of everything, and you're so 100% right. And I'm not faulting the folks on Twitter for a little bit of a freak out Debbie Downer moment in the second half, 35 seconds in, when you fall behind 15 points, where 35 seconds before that, it was 1 point. But to their credit, and I think this is the case throughout the entire season, and really since Bronco got here, they did not give up at any point. And that was evident when they came back and scored right away on the next possession. And then interception by Quinn Blanding, going down the field, put together a smart, concise drive. Another nice pass to Donnie Dowling, who caught that ball through interference, pass interference. The guy was like hanging on like a cape, and there's just so much to take away and so much to like from this game. It was the most stressful thing I've ever watched. You can ask either of the dogs that were in my apartment at the time of watching. Well, a lot of swear words, a lot of celebrations.
It speaks to the margin of error is always going to be pretty small for this team, at least this season. And they made their mistakes and had some not go their way, but did enough in the end to really shock a lot of people, and I'm sure some Georgia Tech staff members included. What's the difference between that Virginia team Saturday and the one that just got their butts kicked by lesser teams than Georgia Tech for sure the previous 2 weeks?
I think part of it, and I think Coach Mendenhall addressed this a little bit after the game, but part of it was just kind of they seemed freer. Like the attitude was just more like the sidelines returned to a bunch of guys who looked like they were having fun. The sidelines looked more like the sidelines at Boise State than the sidelines against Boston College. I've got some like sweet allergies going right now. But what I mean by that is like Coach Mendenhall said that they actually addressed the bowl game thing. Whereas previously, like, they want to treat every game like it's just another game. There's nothing. You just go out there and play. I think after the last two weeks, much like the fans are doing, I'm sure the players are doing the same thing where it's like, should we be worried? Can we do this? Is this going to happen? Like, are we going to make a bowl game after going 5-1? And Coach Mendenhall said, he was like, I decided to address it and talk about it with the players. Not that it was anything that I don't blame them for not wanting to talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of how do you deal with a situation like that?
It's pretty normal coach behavior to ignore it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he made a really good point too, where it's like after the game, letting them celebrate, because as he said, he's like, it's not business. You want to be able like, oh, it's business as usual. We won another game. It's 6 wins. But he's like, but it's not business as usual because Virginia doesn't do this. And if they had, then I wouldn't be here and you wouldn't need me to fix your program, which is so true.
Like, absolutely.
I mean, it's super accurate. And if they beat Tech, I'm first in line to start putting down money for the statue of Bronco out front of the Scott Stadium. No,
that is a big if. I just think we can talk about that down the road.
Yeah, we can talk about that later. But I'm saying, like, I'm just so many levels of happy. I will call myself out. I am not even kidding. I cried a little. And so it was the same, not the same level or intensity as like after Virginia won the ACC tournament in basketball in 2014. I did all the post game stuff. Everything was good to go. I mean, I was on the court, like a little humble brag, whatever, on the court as confetti falls, as Joe Harris is like standing on the little platform and like whatever. And I've got all these great videos and I saved some of the confetti. Like that was, and I was fine. I did all the post game. Took pictures, talked to the coaches, took video, whatever. I got back to the hotel in Greensboro and I called my mom to like tell her or like talk about it. She'd watched it, but like talk about it. And I got really emotional. Like I was like, oh my God, they did it. And there was a little bit of that. Not to that level. And again, I know how stupid and cheesy this sounds. Like it's a bunch of 18 to 22 year olds playing a game of football in random November. But the thing that was so exciting, and I don't even give a shit if people will make fun of me for this or if Tech fans want to be like, look at Virginia for rushing the field after getting a 6th win, like making a bowl. I don't care. Celebrate the hell out of it, guys.
Any realistic
those are guys.
A Hokie fan would understand that. That's
like, to see the smile on Andre Lavroni's face, who's a 5th-year senior who's been there 5 years and they haven't made a bowl game. Micah Kaiser, or the young guys who are putting their heart, you know, they make a decision to come to a struggling program to try and win some games and put Virginia on the map. Like these guys are now like, this sets a tone. Like this is a new, it's like, it was just, I was really excited for the fans. I love that it was in the pouring rain in Charlottesville. I wish more than anything I could have been there, but yeah, I gotta work. It's fine. But it's cool that it was like the 15,000 fans that like stuck it out. Yeah, probably the same 15,000 that stuck it out over the last 10 years.
For sure.
So for them to be there and to be able to go in the field and like I don't know. I just really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed. Well, it's a lie. I did not enjoy all of it. That is a huge lie. But as soon as, you know, and like I said, there's so many people to call out as outstanding performers. Like, how do you? Micah Kizer had 18 tackles.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
And we called him out on the podcast for his performance in those lesser games, in those losses. So,
yeah.
I'm not saying we caused his better play, but obviously it was something that we saw needed to be addressed, and he stepped up. Whether
Andrew Brown was fantastic.
Coaches. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Some true freshmen that we hadn't seen much of who were fantastic, particularly Mandy Alonzo on the D-line.
So good.
You know, a lot of awesome performances. But you're right, it hopefully validates the decision for Micah and for Quinn to stay another year. I think in the end, you're going to see that it definitely validated it for both of them in their draft position at the end of this season. But it's such a weight off of everyone involved, even Bronco, who shouldn't have expectations of the. I know we talked about what would be a successful season. A lot of people said bowl game. That doesn't mean that it needed to be the expectation for Bronco in his second year to make it to a bowl
right.
this program. But even without that mandatory expectation, it's got to be a huge lift after going 5-1, because like we said, you know, the choke job articles, the cynicism from fans opposing or UVA, they're, you know, it adds so much. And in addition to that extra practice, which seems to be everybody's favorite thing to note about bowl games. Oh, it's like, it's the classic, like, well, you know, they also get that extra practice. It's like, know, we all read the message. like we all know that nowadays, guy. You know.
And it's cool because Bronco is also like clearly very emotionally invested, which obviously you would hope and assume would be the case, but it has been a year and a half. Like,
yeah,
it was very cool to see him that, I don't know, I really, really like this coaching staff from what it's, and I know, again, I know it's early and I know it's like, maybe it's just the 6 wins go straight to my head, but like the way that they've handled everything and even the coach speak that's still going on, like they're not done. Like, I'm really curious to see how stuff goes on Saturday against Louisville, because I'm curious to see how they come out in the game. I don't think there'll be a hangover is what I'm saying. I guess what I'm saying.
Right.
Like,
right.
There could be some sort of thing where you rest. I don't start something like resting their laurels, or they don't seem satisfied with just 6 wins, which is cool to see. Like, and obviously you don't expect them to say like 6 wins, we're good. Like, whatever. Right. But
and they can play well and lose by 20 points. You know, Louisville has that type of potential for sure. So I don't think.
Yeah. Or we could play them very close and they get lucky at the end.
or we could, you know, play them well and win. You know, I think a lot of.
Yeah. I think that we are going to give them a run for their money.
I mean, let's talk about the Louisville game. The spread has been moving. So I think some people have some faith in the Hoos. The spread started at like 11, 10 and a half, 11, which is, you know, pretty sizable.
I think it started at 9. I think it's getting bigger.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's moving the other way, which is weird. Because even the like Louisville fans are like, wait, what? You're favoring us by how much?
Yeah. I think they're favored for good reason. You know, but they've
one reason, and his initials are LJ.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a good reason.
Yeah, it's a very good reason. I'm not saying it's a bad reason. I'm saying it's a reason.
But UVA stepped up on the road in situations like this before. You know, it's not out of the realm of the possibility that they get a W.
No, absolutely not. They've played Louisville really well each season, I believe. The first year, Virginia won. The second year at Louisville was close, if I remember correctly. Now I'm going to go look into this.
Because
they won the first year on that, like, muff punt late. Not us that muffed it. Yay!
Finally.
That was the one in Charlottesville. And I think they were ranked at the time or whatever, a big upset. Mm-hmm. I think when is Teddy Bridgewater? Like making up stuff now. Let's see. 23-21 was the final in that one. And they were number 21. First victory against a ranked team since 2011. Let's just do all sorts of 2011.
No, you're right. The last time they played on the road, they lost by 7 in 2015.
Okay.
And then obviously lost last year by 7 as well. So it's all been one-score games. It's been 3 years of the faux rivalry there. And, yeah, I mean, if they beat the spread, then that means it was a one-score game this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Or potentially a UVA win. Maybe UVA will blow them out of the water. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, if Ben Kurt's playing like he was doing this Saturday, they can put up a lot of points against Louisville, who hasn't shown much of a tendency to stop teams from putting up too many points this year.
Yeah, so. Their defense is giving up almost 31 points a game.
Right.
And are allowing 410 yards per game, mm-hmm. which is a lot. But they're also, like, put on their offensive side, putting up 549 yards. So
yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, they still have Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I think yes, he is still a person who's there. Mm-hmm. I saw an interesting – I wish I was looking for where I could find the stat again, but I don't know if it was just ACC. I wish I could find this thing. But Kurt Benkert's numbers in the league over – with passes over 20 yards, I think it is. Oh, here it is. I found it. So in the ACC – they're only completing for 30% of the time, which is not great. On throws 15 plus yards downfield, he has 11 touchdowns and 1 interception.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that the 11 touchdowns is the best in the conference.
Gotcha.
Lamar Jackson has 9. A few guys have 9. And his passing efficiency is 158.7.
Gotcha.
On 15 plus downfield. So they're getting, like, if that stuff connects, that's the biggest thing that we saw in some of those losses, like, because those balls weren't connecting, especially like Indiana or whatever, like, then that just closes off that part of the game. And
yeah,
they're able just to kind of shut you down. Yeah. I don't know. Every single time that the highlights from the Georgia Tech game have come across my screen, whether it's like, someone retweets it, or Virginia did the, like, oh, here's Dave Kane and Andre Lavroni talking about the highlights. I was like, mm-hmm. click, we'll click every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't believe some of those plays still. Like, there was the punt by Lester Coleman that, like, stopped on its own on the 3-yard line before the safety.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How does that even happen?
Soggy grass.
Like,
yeah, and he's a good punter. He might not be the best punter in the nation, Caroline, as we learned on Twitter. But he's definitely.
Why does Alabama need a good punter? Like, if I'm a good punter, I want to win a national championship.
Yeah, if you're like the most talented punter coming out of high school, every school is going to be like, yeah, sure, come. Well, let's see. Which one will I have the best experience at? I think Alabama's going to be pretty close.
But you never get to punt.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I was going to say, like, you should go to, like, a pretty bad team, right? Because, like, at least you'll be out there showcasing your skills.
Wouldn't you rather punt just, like, once or twice a game and know that you still have the chance to play at the next level because you are that good at punting? It's not like you needed that much, like, live game experience. Well, I don't know. I guess punting could be stressful. Anyway, I've never done it.
Yeah, I guess maybe if I could punt, like, twice in a game, and then, like, that's it. And then they give me a national championship ring.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be like, this is the best deal ever. I guess that's fair. But, yeah, no, Lester was fantastic. When I saw that his average was, like, 48 yards or something like that, 43 yards, I was like, really? But I guess it makes sense because wherever you're kicking from, you know, the various points in the field and whatever else. I would like to say I've been very impressed with, well, I don't know how to say his name. I say it different every time, but AJ Mejia.
We can just call him the kicker.
I've been very impressed with the kicker.
Yeah. I like how he does trick shots to try and keep it spicy.
Shout out to the Virginia football Snapchat person, whoever, whatever intern or student that is, because they caught that on Snapchat. I wish I knew how to stream videos on Snapchat that aren't mine. But the sound it made was like, ba-dum, ba-dum, and then went through. And the commentators watching it were pretty funny. He's like, we had to go back and look at that. And they showed it, and I almost died a little bit thinking about what would have happened if it didn't go through. But yes, in a situation where, like, last year, I mean, look at the UConn game. Like, they wouldn't even punt, or they tried to get it on their last minute. Sorry, I always use those as an example. It's not the best example. But to go from, like, oh, this would be a 27-yarder, we're not even going to attempt it, to he kicked 3 field goals, 3 for 3, and 3 for 3 on extra points. Like, that's a huge thing in the game. So next step is to hit a game winner.
Ooh. Ooh.
Maybe he'll do that this week.
Maybe.
When the pressure's on.
We should talk a little bit. I don't know if you watched it, the Miami-Virginia Tech game, as I imagine it'll be a point of conversation for Wahoo fans, because both of those teams not only are in the Coastal with UVA, but also remaining on UVA's schedule after Louisville this weekend. Miami, of course, won that game. Virginia Tech, of course, spent a lot of time giving Miami reason to celebrate its turnover chain. Tech fans were blaming the refs for blah, blah, blah or something. So who knows what the officiating was like. But it doesn't matter. Miami soundly defeated them statistically via score and winning. So Miami is the favorite to win the division. UVA, in fact, is the only team that can keep them from winning the division.
Which is hysterical. Can you imagine the meltdown?
Can you imagine the meltdown among the University of Virginia fan base? Like, if they just went ahead and won out. I mean, what would, like, you'd be like, no, none of this is real. So clearly I'm still listening. People would be having a breakdown from disbelief. But anyway, I think, you know, you look at those two games and wonder who looks beatable. I think particularly UVA fans want to know, does Tech look beatable? And they definitely do, because Jackson, their QB, has just had sort of a rough go of it recently, but particularly that game. However, Miami's defense is absurd. I mean, the UVA just needs to show up and just try and not get hurt. I mean, you know, yeah, obviously you try and win the game, and that's why they play the games. There's always a chance they could win. I don't think Miami are world beaters or anything like that and can make their own mistakes, but their defense is nasty. And I saw something after the game. The Tech coaches or someone said, we knew what defense Miami was calling. They were keeping it real simple, and it was very easy to determine what defense they were doing, and it didn't matter.
That's what's fun to say.
It didn't matter whatsoever.
The only reason I saw that pop up is because some, like, Miami fans were like, did he just say he knew what we were calling?
Right.
And I was like, I don't think he meant it like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he meant it's not like Wakey Leaks here. Like, although Virginia Tech was the team that did get the info. However, I think it'll be interesting. So just for those listening, if you're not aware how Virginia is still up there for the Coastal, if Virginia wins out, which would include a win over Miami, and Miami also loses to Pitt, then we would end up in a tie with Miami at the top of the division. Mm-hmm. And also maybe Virginia Tech in there, even if Virginia Tech wins out. So if we win out, obviously, then we'd hold tiebreakers over Miami and Virginia Tech.
Right.
So we would be de facto. It's still so funny. Sorry,
de facto, that's just like out now.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, we'd be winners because
that's a fun hypothetical to talk about.
Oh my god, it's awesome.
Zero more seconds. And
I guess now I'm like telling myself, like, well, it's possible. Because, like you said, I think each team has at times definitely looked beatable. I mean, obviously, they are beatable, they've lost games. Well, Miami hasn't, but. yeah, it's interesting to see what'll happen. Like, Tech really struggled
I think
with Miami.
It's just interesting to see Miami look this good. I think we all said at the beginning, at least I, you know, I said that, more people than not were picking them to be the coastal favorites at the beginning of the year. So
yeah,
there was
that's
some
who I picked.
Expected improvement, but I think there was expectations were lower on the Hokies without a quarterback. And certainly Duke and UNC have underperformed, or you know, UNC's been
sure.
by injuries or whatnot. So it sort of made sense that Miami would be probably winning the Coastal at this point, but they no one picked them to be a top 10 team in the country and undefeated
in November
the schedule. But still, you know, like being undefeated by this point in a major conference, no matter who you played, is still means you're a pretty darn good team.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I know they.
I mean, shit.
Tulsa
even Clemson has a loss.
Exactly right. So, you know, Mark Richt has really, again, back to the defense, got them playing lights out down there in Coral Gables. You know, they've never played in an ACC championship game. Isn't
I
that
know, right?
Surprising?
Which is why it would be even funnier if we
did them out of it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we could talk about
but
that.
But let's
after
talk about something that will happen.
What's that?
Which is Virginia going to a bowl.
Woo!
So. What so what we're looking at, and I know the esteemed Matt Trogdon put together something on streakingthelawn.com that you should check out, which is, you know, kind of a, okay, what happens now type thing. Well, what happens now is, so for those worrying out there, the chance, Virginia is going to make a bowl game. Like, and just let's put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple people have been like, oh, doesn't, you know, they have to be just selected by someone. So
yeah, it's
like, yeah.
Yeah. They're going to
a Power Five school with six wins, especially one that hasn't been to a bowl game in a while, that has fans that want to go to a bowl game. They're going to get picked up.
Yeah.
I have 0% fear that Virginia is not going to get a bowl game because one, there are just so many spots and they're looking, probably they're going to have to take some 5-7 teams again this year. So
yeah.
First and foremost,
exactly.
Virginia is going to a bowl. So I feel very comfortable saying we're going bowling.
You've made that note.
From there, yeah, it's very curious to see what happens going forward. Because if Virginia continues to win, then obviously they will move up that pecking order into more comfortably into the tier one schools. Right now they're being
we're going to the
in
Orange
lower
Bowl.
Tier one. We're going streaking. I selfishly would love for them to go to the Military Bowl here in Annapolis or close to DC. One, because it's an awesome bowl and I intern there and they're the coolest and I love them. Hi guys. And it's local and Annapolis is fun and there's a lot of fans that can travel and it benefits the USO, all those good things. But there's also some really cool options when it comes to the Belk Bowl, which would be neat in Charlotte. There's the Pinstripe Bowl in New York. A lot of people are in the Sun Bowl in El Paso.
Woo!
Which is very far down.
El Paso.
Someone's like, hey, beggars can't be choosers.
It's like, it's pretty.
But we're not begging anymore. We get to choose.
I mean, in no way, shape, or form am I going if it's in El Paso.
Yeah, that's my thing.
I'm poor.
yeah, exactly.
And I imagine it takes more money to get there than me driving to Charlotte.
Yeah, or driving to Annapolis.
I don't care if they go. I mean, you know, I don't care if they go to the El Paso Bowl.
I don't care either. I'm like, I just would really like to go.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't go if it was out. I don't think I could make it. I think it's a better way to put it.
Right.
But yeah,
at the
there's
very
a lot
least,
of options.
It's not like
a
slight. Like the Sun Bowl's not a terrible bowl, you know. For the
no, not at all. Sun Bowl, I love you. You're wonderful people. Yeah.
So
it'll
it's
be
only
interesting
for
because there's a lot of
transportation reasons.
Oh, for sure. there's a lot of things left to happen. Obviously, there's still 3 weeks
yep.
left in the season. And it could go, you know, the worst case scenario is Virginia loses out. And then most likely I could see them ending up in a tier two bowl. So probably like being in the range for a Military Bowl bid type thing, or they win a big one. And I don't know. There's so many things that could happen. You can't even, yeah. I mean, technically, they could win out and end up in, like, a pretty high bowl. They could go to a championship game, and then, you know, what does that do to them?
Well, if they win, then they go to the Orange Bowl, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Virginia for the college football playoff. Kurt Benkert,
three-loss team in America.
From no name to Heisman winning national champion.
That'll be amazing. Watch out, Saquon. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff. It's fun to keep an eye on. And honestly, like, normally this time of year with basketball season starting by the time this comes out, probably today. Hey, happy basketball season, everyone. Like, that's all we'd want to talk about. We'd be talking about who is starting for Greensboro and, you know, going back and forth again over who we think is going to be the starting five for Virginia. Is Ty Jerome healthy enough? Are they going to let him sit a couple games to rest his ankle or whatever his foot? But here we are talking about what bowl game we're going to because Virginia's bowl eligible and it's the greatest. So it's really fun. I'm going to tell you, winning is way more fun.
Hallelujah.
and all the content. Look at that. There's so much stuff to write about. Micah Kaiser has been on the watch list or a finalist for like 8 million awards, which is so awesome and so well-deserved. Like, he's up for the inaugural Jason Witten Football Man of the Year. I've lost track of all of the awesomeness. It's fun. It's
all
just,
of the awards he's up for.
Yeah. Those are so many. Academic Heisman.
Last week, our football team's Malcolm Brogdon. Like,
exactly.
But,
Phone has been playing well, Malcolm.
Let us talk about Friday night. This upcoming
Friday. Let's talk about Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
The bouncy ball.
Yay!
My favorite of sports is back. I'll be there at the JPJ for the opener. Hooray! And the Hoos are going to open their season against UNC Greensboro. I should probably
look. Yes, that is a.
But yeah.
It is in fact UNC Greensboro.
And I'm just so excited. The basketball season is about to start. I know we've talked a lot about it on these podcasts coming up to it, and you've seen a lot of who's going to be a major impactful player, who steps up in scoring, who might be surprised, what to expect from the freshman, yada, yada, yada. Now it's just here. Now we get to see it and go, yes, yeah. That looks good, or he doesn't look like I thought he'd look, or whatever. So,
Wow, Caroline's right. Jack Saul is the best player in America.
Yeah, Jack Saul developed a mid-range jumper in the lane, and it's just scoring 30 points a game.
It's going to be amazing.
I did read a funny thing today. They interviewed Mike Curtis over on Rivals, I think, and he just said something along the lines of, and plus, Jay Huff has to, you know, spend another year just getting beat up by Jack Salt every day. So it's gotta benefit him somehow. And I like viscerally had it read like a, oh God, yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, that would do something. I at ACC Media Day, whatever last week or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago now. It's been interesting talking to Coach Bennett and some of the players. So Jack and Isaiah and Devin are the team captains, and I guess Coach Bennett has made it more of a thing this year, like kind of emphasizing their leader, you know, giving them more power or that kind of thing. Like he's just making it a little bit bigger of a deal this year. He's like, I'm not giving them like C's to wear on their cardigans, which made me laugh so hard thinking of Jack Saul walking on grounds in a cardigan.
Get those. It would be the most Tony Bennett thing ever if they had little cardigans.
He's like, they're not walking around grounds and they're topsiders with their cardigans with a big C on them. And in my mind, I immediately am like, why aren't they? This would be amazing.
You're going to buy them all cardigans, aren't you? Yeah. I mean.
Oh my God. It'd be so.
Yeah,
that's an impermissible benefit.
Yeah, are you like, those Nike
can buy them all
cardigans? That must be what has to happen. I don't know.
It'd be amazing. I cannot get that image. That's such the best image. But I was talking to him about, so Kyle Guy had mentioned that they each have their own distinct like leadership style, and as people do and as teammates do and all that. But he said it's really funny that like how they've kind of fallen into their roles. And Jack Salt's the guy you go to. And so I'm asking Coach Bennett a question specifically about this. And I was like, you know, and Kyle said that Jack is, and he's like there to beat people up if he needs to. So you go to him if you have a problem. He's like, yeah, I'm sure you could just beat up anybody. Like, oh no, that's not what he meant. But yeah, like Jack C, Yeah, he's like the helpful guy that'll like, you go to him with your problems and he helps you out. Like the younger guys will go to him, and
he gets
Devin's
their
the one
cats
you
out of the
don't want to
tree.
disappoint.
Yeah. He doesn't even need
Devin's
the
the one you
ladder.
don't want to disappoint. Yeah, and Isaiah's the one who'll kind of like yell at you. But in like a fun, like, come on, man, like that kind of way. So it's just, I'm really excited. These guys just seem like a good group. Who are your starting five? Like, who do you think will take the court on Friday?
But it's two different things between who do I think will and who would I put as the starting five. And again, like we said last week, the starting five isn't usually the most minutes for this team. Guy, obviously. And then I struggle with the wings because you've got Wilkins, obviously. So that's two right there. Wilkins isn't going to be the center. So you're saying either Salt or Diakite. I know he's going to play Salt. Obviously, I want to see Diakite get as many minutes as possible. But regardless, it's going to be one of those two.
Salt hater.
I don't hate Salt. Diakite is just should be a superior player once he plays to his potential. Oh, yeah, you can't disagree with that.
Without Jack in there, I can disagree with that.
Listen to what I'm saying. If Diakite is playing to where we want him to be, that's going to be a better player than Jack Salt. Correct?
I think that they're two different players. Like,
I mean,
Diakite set screens the way that Jack does? No. Will the offense run the same?
Can he set screens the way that Jack does? That's the biggest thing for the center to do.
Have you seen his screens?
Okay, the benefit of Jack Stahl's screen settings, resolution. The benefit, however much better Jack Salt is over Diakite at setting screens. Let's say Diakite never gets to above a 7 out of 10 on setting screens. And you're saying Salt's a 10 out of 10, right?
He's an 11. Turn that up to 11.
That's not feasible in the actual logic that I'm laying out here, Caroline. Whatever the difference is between the two, between Diakite's ceiling and Jack Salt's production setting screens, that difference is so meaningless to the potential in defense and scoring that Diakite brings to the position. And this is all on potential. I'm just super optimistic on his potential. So if it's not there and he's
I'm mostly
then fair enough.
But I do think that because I think one, Salt is actually very underrated as a defender. Because Diakite is more of the flashy defender where he'll get a block, and not that there's no problem with that. So I'm obviously have a year of watching him in the pack line that's difficult, and he's put on a lot of muscle and a lot of weight. But I think that he's in not only – I'm going away from the Diakite Salt comparison in this situation, but I just get really frustrated, which is why I stand so hard for Jack. Is because, like, I just sit there and I'm like, why does everyone – like, people in the comment sections are just like, soon he won't even have to be on the court. And I'm like, that's not
Jack,
a good thing for the team.
The frustrations come from, you know, when he picks up two quick fouls back-to-back. Or when
that's
he misses,
because he looks like Ivan Drago. It's not his fault.
Or when he misses a bunny, or attempts a underhand, you know, reverse layup.
Those aren't great.
There are those moments that are obviously very frustrating. But I don't think most UVA fans or ones listening to this are rooting against the guy, or who knows.
I'm curious.
Obviously, they want him to do well because it means the team's going
to
do well. But let me finish my starting five. So if I'm starting Diakite, even though I know Tony's going to start Salt, that leaves two spaces with Wilkins and Guy. And it's a really tough call for me because Hall's a senior. Hall has scoring ability. Hall does well in defense, has everything you want, really, other than maybe he's not going to like blow by a guy to get in the lane, like that slashing type that we know we need, where Nigel Johnson does have that ability to get by a guy and is known to, you know, we haven't seen it yet for UVA, but is known to be that type of lockdown defender, be the quick on the court too. So similar-ish skills somewhat, assuming Johnson shoots as well as people are saying he's built a shot up, because Hall certainly shoots the ball well. And then Ty Jerome's Ty Jerome. I mean, he brings a swagger to the team. He brings a scoring ability. He doesn't have quite that shifty speed to him, but I think he does take his guy off the ball into the lane, and we saw that a handful of times in the tournament towards the end of the season. So there's sort of an amalgamation between those three of different skills that we want in addition to Kyle being out there. And I think it's game by game. If you're playing against UNC and Joel Berry's on the floor, I think you got to put Nigel Johnson on him. You know, in that case, you're starting him, right? Well, then who do you sit, Hall or Jerome? Like, that's you know, it sounds insane to sit either of
them. Yeah.
So it's a good problem to have, but I think it's got to be situational. Right now, I would go, we'll sit Johnson and have him come in and spell whichever guard needs spelling right away. You know, he's going to come in right
away.
Like Kyle has when he hasn't been starting.
My five that I think – I'll put my one caveat with it based on the full health of Ty, whether it's foot or whatever's healthy, but – I think it's going to be the ones that I think are guaranteed to start are Jack, Devin, and Isaiah. Those are my three that I think will always be.
You got to have Devin guys starting. And, you got. I know what you mean. Like it's
I do too, because seeing him shoot, and I think that he's in there for me. And then it comes down to, I think Ty will be the usual starter with Johnson coming first off the bench. Mm-hmm. But I think Johnson might start Friday because of there's no reason to rush Ty back for no offense UNC Greensboro.
No, that's a good point. Like, yeah. No, that's
so I think Friday night it will be those five. So mm-hmm. Devin, Jack, Isaiah, Nigel, and Kyle. Unless I said two names the same, but whatever. And then going forward, like VCU, I think Devin Hall. I don't maybe break him in the press.
Okay, so why don't we finish things up for the basketball season? We're not doing a whole basketball preview podcast. Let's do a real quick, just gut reaction to the schedule. Predict some wins and losses for me. You think you can handle that?
Overall.
No, we're gonna go game by game. You have to pick at least two losses. Okay. You promise? Okay. All right.
Yes.
UNC Greensboro at home.
Win.
All right. Austin Peay at home.
Win.
VCU on the road.
Win, but close.
Okay. Monmouth home.
Win.
All right. Vanderbilt in New York.
Win.
Okay. Seton Hall or Rhode Island in New York.
Seton Hall, definite win. Rhode Island would be closer, but win.
All right. Wisconsin in Charlottesville.
Oh, this one is one of my God, I can't unsee the last
time we played. We owe them. They made an atrocity of a game last time they played here.
They lost a bunch of guys. I'm going to go win.
All right. Lehigh in Charlottesville.
Win.
West Virginia in Morgantown.
Loss.
All right. Davidson in Charlottesville.
Win.
Savannah State, home.
That's win.
Yeah. Hampton, home.
Win.
Boston College, home.
Win.
Hokies in Blacksburg.
Loss.
Boo loss. Ooh, all right. North Carolina at home.
Win.
All right. Syracuse at home.
Win.
Okay, NC State at home.
Win.
Georgia Tech in Atlanta.
That's a win.
All right, Wake Forest on the road.
This is one that I feel like could be tricky. It's going to be a lot closer. I'm going to go win.
All right, no Darius Thompson here to bank in three-pointers. Clemson at home.
At home win. They don't have Jerome Blossom game anymore.
All right. Duke on the road.
Loss.
All right. Louisville at home.
Win.
Syracuse in the Carrier Dome.
Win.
FSU on the road.
Loss.
Virginia Tech at home.
Win. Big.
Miami on the road.
Loss.
All right, Georgia Tech at home.
Win.
Pitt on the road.
Win.
Louisville on the road.
That's going to be a loss.
And finishing things up, Notre Dame in Charlottesville.
Win.
All right, so six losses if I counted correctly. I was using my hands, but I may have spaced out. I think we're at six, which sounds like a regular season that most UVA fans would be happy with. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, if they'd not, they are crazy. Yeah, we'll say that right now.
There's a couple of those. The biggest ones in the non – the only ones that I think will be close in the non-conference are VCU, Wisconsin, potentially Rhode Island if they play them, and West Virginia.
For sure. Davidson, in not the, quite the Davidson that they've always been. Yeah. They were when we were in college.
Right. Yeah, and then the ACC, there's a few more that I think could be toss-ups, like depending on – FSU is just one of those teams that you're like, holy shit, they're all so athletic and tall and interchangeable. Like when it comes to just like pure athleticism, they're all like 6'7" and rangy. I think this team will be, it'll be interesting. There's a couple more early in the season that I'm curious to see how the team's like gelling together, how they're playing. But I think by late stretch.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. That's how the season's going to go. Stay tuned to streakingthelawn.com for coverage of the Hoos game Friday night for basketball and, of course, the football team on the road, 3:30, I believe, in Louisville. We'll be back soon to talk about both of those wins this weekend. Shout out to men's soccer making it to, I believe, the semifinals of the ACC tournament after winning and PKs. That game is Wednesday night in Charlottesville.
Because Notre Dame beat North Carolina, so Virginia became the higher-seeded team. Thanks, Notre Dame.
There we go. All right, for Caroline and myself and everybody else at Streaking the Lawn, go Hoos!